The Dutch Swing College Jazz Band has a proud history lasting from the end of World War II through the present day, playing classic early jazz. In this hour, I'll be discussing the Dutch Swing College with Chris Vonk, who knew and studied with its founder, Peter Schilperik. We'll also consider the earlier jazz scene in Holland from which the Dutch Swing College emerged. Hi, welcome to Jazz Rhythm, an exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. I'm Dave Radlauer. Here's Peter Schilperik on clarinet with the Dutch Swing College in 1974 playing Jimmy Noone's rarely heard Apex Blues.
Thank you.
Original Dixieland One Step. Dutch Swing College Band founder Peter Schilper playing clarinet on that rare disc recorded in The Hague for the Ramparts label in 1949. Still ahead, my interview with Chris Vonk, a longtime fan of Dutch Swing College, a brief review of jazz history in Holland, and recordings of the band ranging from 1949 to 1974, including one with Sidney Bechet. Before we focus exclusively on the Dutch Swing College Band, I just want to provide a little broader background on jazz in Holland. The event that galvanized jazz musicians in Holland was the arrival of Coleman Hawkins in 1935. Hawkins was a sensation in Holland during the 3 or 4 years he lived there in the late 30s. During this time, Coleman Hawkins was recording and touring with the best Dutch jazz musicians in two bands, the Berries, and in this band, the Ramblers. Coleman Hawkins in 1935 with the Ramblers, the only known version of band trumpeter Jack Bolterman's dreamy Meditation. This is Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer, studying the Dutch Swing College. As a youth in Holland, my guest, Chris Vonk, was playing clarinet with young jazz enthusiasts and dance ensembles, but was, in his own words, lacking proficiency. On his way to finding instruction, eventually under the tutelage of Peter Schilpert, was at least one detour.
Now, you spoke of another fellow, a black tenor saxophone player.
Right. He was not an American. He was not from the United States. He was from Suriname. That's Dutch Guiana. You know where that is, next to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Dutch colony. He was a tenor sax man and a real wild man, a honker, and made the most outrageous sounds on his saxophone.
Let's see, what name did he go by?
Kid Dynamite.
Kid Dynamite was his stage name.
Yeah, right.
And at one point, let's see, didn't you approach him for lessons?
Right, he had advertised in the paper that he was taking some pupils. And I went to his house, which was rather disreputable part of town, but, and I talked to him. I was very, very, very shy. I was maybe 14, 15 years old. But he was not interested in giving clarinet lessons. He didn't play the clarinet, and he said I better find someone else.
We've talked about the Nazi influence on jazz and the Nazis trying to control jazz, and it took some rather extreme dimensions in Holland, didn't it?
Yes, I think Holland was under party rule. We had a commissar, Reichskommissar, so we were not under military rule like Belgium, and Belgium was much more liberal in that respect than Holland was.
And the Nazi authorities issued a document to the Dutch Musicians Union forbidding, quote, licks and riffs repeated more than three times in succession by a soloist or more than 16 times for one section or for two or more sections, unquote, unless by a special permit, which was granted in cases, quote, where such music is interpreted by persons having two or more Negroid or Negritic grandparents, unquote, the Nazi dictum.
Right, I remember this little pamphlet. It was quite a few laughs at the time when it came out.
Well, who wrote that for the Nazis?
It was done by a man of good intentions. He was a newspaper music critic with a great interest in jazz. He had been a collaborator on a book about jazz in Dutch, but he believed that jazz music was exclusively black people's music and white people should not even try to participate in this. This was his way to stamp out all these fake imitations of black music.
So this was something that was issued by the Nazi authorities to the Dutch Musicians Union.
Right, right.
What else can you tell us about that document?
I don't think people paid much attention to it. Because who was going to police it? The one thing that they were effective in banning was the use of English lyrics and English and American songs. So everything had to be homegrown or German or French.
Uh-huh. They tried to ban Boogie Woogie.
Right. That was also mentioned in this pamphlet, and they gave a very technical description about a basso ostinato. It was taboo also, not to be done, verboten.
Thank you.
As I spoke with Chris about the Dutch Swing College and its origins in the mid-1940s, it was apparent that he had also observed jazz and swing in Holland during a slightly earlier time, before and during World War II.
Nonetheless, you were old enough to play some jazz. How did that come about?
Well, in the first place, we did not have high school bands like you have in the United States. So wind players were extremely scarce. If you could get a few sounds out of a horn, you were immediately drafted into some group that wanted to make jazz music. Mm-hmm. For some reason, we had lots and lots of guitar players. And there were some bass players. Pianist was never a problem. But trumpet players were very scarce. And I say, even though I was not at all a proficient clarinet player, I was always in demand.
Now, you played basically in two different settings. One was the small Dixieland, informal Dixieland band?
Yes. I never played in any big bands.
There was a little group, you and some other folks. What did you call that band?
That was the Kit Kat Swingers, yes. That was an existing group. That was a jazz festival every spring in The Hague, in the resort town of Scheveningen. That's on the beach. There's a nice concert hall. And for several years, I don't know how long it had been going on, there was a jazz festival and competition. You were ranked, you know, you were the first prize, second prize. One of the prize winners at one time was this group, the Kit Kat Swingers. I had only read about it in the paper. And then later, during the war, I was playing with some friends of mine, maybe at a party given by a soccer club, something like that. I was approached by a much older fellow. He was 10 years older than I was, I guess. He said, "Hey, I like your clarinet playing. Would you like to join my group?" That happened to be the Kit Kat Swingers, and I was very flattered and very pleased.
Primarily parties and so forth?
Mainly, this was all still underground. We were rehearsing for the day that we could be out in the open again. Mm-hmm. And of course, even in 1942, 43, we thought that would be next Christmas. We never thought the war would last another year. If we had known how long this was going to last, everybody would have gone out of his mind.
Now, you were also playing some dance music at that time.
Right. As I say, these little groups that we had with the guitar players and the pianist, we played at private parties in people's homes and also at dances that were being held more or less illegally in the many dancing schools that existed at that time. As I say, ballroom dancing had been very popular before the war. And the first years of the war, but then it had been forbidden by the German authorities. From then on, no more levity, no more pleasure, everything, total war. And these dancing schools, these poor people had to make a living somehow, and they would invite young people to come to their places and dance to the music, and the music would be provided by little groups like myself. We had to play the whole thing, foxtrots, tangos. Mm-hmm. Waltzes.
But there was some danger in doing so, wasn't there?
It was against the law. But I've never heard of anybody being caught or being severely punished.
Nonetheless, you told me that if the Nazi patrols came around...
Right. Everybody frees. There was always, like in gangster movies, somebody would look through the, peek through the windows, you know, if the coast was clear. You know.
Well, it's fascinating. Let's hear some more Dutch musicians now. These were actually recorded in Berlin in 1942. This is Harry van Dyk and his orchestra, another Jack Balterman composition. This one is familiar to you, isn't it, Chris?
Right. It was sort of a novelty piece to show off the drummer of the Ramblers.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of drum breaks in it. And the words are about a girl who's madly in love with the drummer of the band.
Even though we're going to hear an instrumental version. Lucia?
Lucia.
Lucia. And then we'll hear Dance of the Penguins, and this does show off the drums of Harry van Dyk, who was a Dutch drummer. And we'll hear the elite of the other Dutch musicians at this time. Rimius van der Broe.
Yeah. Van der Broek.
Van der Broek on trumpet. Jesse Breyer on trombone. And Kees Verschoor.
Yeah, Kees. Kees Verschoor. He's the only one whose name I really remember. He was a very successful studio musician after the war.
Harry van Dyk and his orchestra recorded underground in Berlin in 1942.
Lucia, and Dance of the Penguins, the Dutch musicians of Harry van Dyk and his orchestra, in Berlin in 1942. Those were made as acetates, independent of the German recording companies, giving you an idea of the state of jazz and swing in the Netherlands about the time of World War II. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me for Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. In just a moment, we'll be getting back to the discussion with Chris Vonk, studying the Dutch Swing College. Promotional support provided by the Mississippi Rag. Information on this monthly publication about legendary and contemporary giants of traditional jazz and ragtime is at www.mississippirag.com. And the Jazz Rhythm website is jazzhot.bigstep. That's jazzhot, one word, .bigstep, also one word, .com. Returning now to the main focus of this hour, the Dutch Swing College Band, here they're paying tribute to Johnny Hodges. Schilpert's on soprano saxophone, beautifully emulating Hodges' personal style and luscious tone in this rather modern-sounding tune. An original called Jump the Rabbit is a reference to Hodges' nickname, Rabbit.